I grew up over in Fulton County, and Tata was my first word, and it meant tractor. A big red Case International drove by my window often, and the guy who was our landlord and farmed a lot of the ground around there would go by, and starting pretty young, I could flag him down and hop on. And one time I did that when I was six without letting my mom know, and that was kind of a long day for everybody, but I had a great time riding with him for several hours while he plowed. But, you know, one time I was riding with him when I was eight, and we were down on the river bottom, which is kind of a long way from anywhere. You know, you could see 6 or 7 miles, but you couldn't see anyone. And he just switched over to beans, and he left his soybean head out over the winter, and so it was rusty, and it wasn't behaving very well to begin with, and then he dipped it in the dirt a couple times. And so he got down out of the cab several times and was cleaning it off, and the last time he grabbed for something to pull himself up on, and what he grabbed was the manual hydraulic release lever. And so he set the bean head down on his hip, and he was down there hollering, and I was back up in the cab, and I could sure hear him over the engine. And so I was pretty nerdy, and I was really into the machines, and I knew exactly what every control that I could see did in that cabin. So I hit the button, and it didn't do anything. And so I ran down there and talked to him and said, "Hey, you know, it's not working." And he said, "You got to boost the throttle up." So I ran back up to the cabin, climbed back up in there, and revved the throttle up. And he's, you know, still under the head, 4 feet from the wheels, and the little control that lets you toggle the head up and down is on the hydrostat, just like a riding lawnmower. And so, you know, I could have just as easily pushed it forward and rolled the combine over him, and it seemed pretty trusting, but I guess in retrospect he didn't have a lot of other options. And he knew that I was pretty into machines, so I lifted the head up off of him, and then, you know, he was still fairly uncomfortable. But he had one of these early cell phones, and you couldn't call 911 back then, but I had a couple of the neighbor's numbers memorized. And so I called the neighbor and said, "Hey, you know, Kurt's had a bit of an accident." And so they called the helicopter, and they came right down and landed in the field down the river bottom. But the first person there was the lady I called, who was my local 4-H leader, and she was the wife of, I guess you could call them, you know, my friend Kurt's rivals. There were two farms, each of them over 1,000 acres, half a mile apart, in Fulton County, which has plenty of non-farm ground to begin with. And so, you know, I'm sure that these guys were competing for land and other stuff, and, you know, one of them had red tractors and one of them had green tractors, and they kind of had this classic rivalry going on. But she was the first person there. Before any emergency responders, you know, she was there in 4 minutes flat, which probably meant that she was driving about 80, you know. And a lot of people came, and they sent him away to the hospital, and he was okay, but he was off of the equipment for the season, for sure. And I got a ride up the road back home to a neighbor, and my mom was in town, so I was there alone in the house, and I wasn't great at having feelings when I was eight, so I was mostly bemused and a little exhilarated. So I grabbed a soda out of the fridge, which was kind of a treat, and sat down to reread my favorite submarine battles in my favorite Tom Clancy book to calm down. And my mom got home, and knowing that she would be deeply affected by this, I tried to, as nonchalantly as possible, let her know what had happened. And she still threw up, but anyway, I go back to this every once in a while and try to see what it means. And one thing that I learned from it is that farming communities are tighter than they might seem, and even though people are, you know, competing for land, competing for all kinds of stuff, you know, his rival, whose wife was the first one to arrive, organized the effort that harvested the rest of his crop. And there was a picture in Prairie Farmer magazine of 8 or 9 different combines in the same field. And his rival was the one to step up and choreograph all this so that every other farm family came over for one day with their combine and got it all in, and they had a big banquet, and it was pretty cool. And it was my first glance into the how alive the agriculture community is, and how much they would step together and help each other when something really happened. And maybe something else that I learned is that the way that we farm now, we use some incredible technologies, but they can be kind of double-edged, and it's really easy to feel like we're in control and everything will be all right when we're up in the cab of a big, powerful diesel machine rolling down the road. But, that day, I saw that these, the power that we wield in our modern farming can really come back and bite us. And that metaphor is expanded to be a lot less just literal than when I first saw it. Now I think about compaction and all the different chemicals and inputs that we use, and all the different ways that things can come back and bite us. But farming communities are very strong, and they stick together and they talk. And I have no doubt that farmers are going to continue to pursue the coolest practices they hear about and tell each other about them. And farmers really do care for each other, and they want to leave a good landscape. And they also support each other when bad things happen. So I often feel sorry for farmers because they're in the middle of a system that now spans across the whole globe, and there's a lot of things that are out of their control, but what they still can control is how they can help each other when somebody gets hurt. And so I'm not sure what I should take from this story, but it's a thing that happened. Yeah.